Adversity? Bring it. The struggle? I welcome it. Snooze on life? Never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 182. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three. We have Frank, the big focus, Vos, Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela, and I am Dave, the body, Regina. Frank Vos has always felt called to give back to his community. His service to others began as an Eagle Scout and a volunteer firefighter in his late teens. In July of 2015, Frank graduated the police academy. After battling with personal struggle in 2018 and 2019, he finally reached out for help and support. Once Frank improved mentally and physically, he felt called to help other first responders who struggled the way he did and provide them with a safe space to face their anxiety, depression, or addiction in an environment that had brought Frank so much mental and physical strength once before. From that calling, Reps for Responders was born. Frank, welcome to the podcast, my brother.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Thanks my for brother. Having me on.
Yeah, so typically I start with a nickname. So I gave you the big focus. So we'll give the backstory of that. So we had an event at the Sail House in Tarrytown through Action Cultivates Excellence, and we did the ice plunge. I mean, the ice bath. And Frank was in there, and I was doing the guided breath for Frank, and we were just locked in one-on-one, and I've never seen anybody more focused than you in that moment. How'd it feel to be in there, though?
It was great. It was the first time I ever did it. So I've been doing cold showers for about a month now, about like 5 days a week. I do like 2 minutes, 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
That's good.
And
at the end of your shower or
no, like, in the morning?
No, but I'm saying, like, do you shower first and then turn it to cold, or do you jump
straight into cold? That's like me. And then at night to try to warm to get the body to get ready to go to sleep. So I was excited to do it, and it was definitely a big difference from being in the shower to that little ice tub. But that connection was it was just like focused, spiritual, and that was the one thing about it. It was a minute, right? Yep. But it was like a minute of like clarity. It was like an outer body experience, and it was a great way to get the body mentally and physically ready for the workout.
Yep.
It was a great day, and thank you for putting that together. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man, and thank you for the support. And honestly, I'll mention it a couple times here, but I really love what you do, man. I have so much respect for not only you, but this organization that you've really built. Now it's like it's almost like an empire that you're building, because I think, I think it's just so relatable to so many people. And when people hear your story, man, I think it's going to be one of the most jam-packed with value that we've ever really seen on this podcast. But I'd be remiss not to start from the beginning. So, and this is, again, just conversation for my own knowledge. Where did you grow up? And give me a little family background on you.
So I grew up in Rockland County, New York, Congress, aka Seahood. No, I'm kidding. grew up in Congress, New York. Went to Clarkstown North High School, played football there, which is a huge part of my journey and my life. I feel like it really shaped me to the man and the hard work and the dedication and determination that just played out in my whole entire life, and the never give up attitude. Huge. The family aspect, working hard together, camaraderie and all that. Volunteer firefighter, high school. My father, volunteer firefighter, worked for Rockland County. My mom's a nurse, still a nurse. Like we were talking before, uncle retired FDNY. Both my great grandparents were NYPD. Grandfather was FDNY, Vietnam War veteran, Purple Heart. So all this service was in my family and in my, like, what I grew up with, Eagle Scout, Boy Scouts, all that stuff. My brother is also an Eagle Scout. He's younger than me. He's still a volunteer firefighter today. And then I went to Rockland Community College, RCC, after Clarkstown North. But when I went there, I felt like I was missing something. And then I was like, you know what? Not even putting myself down, but I was like, you know what? I'll just go to RCC because I don't really know what to do with my life. And, you know, it's might be easier than going away to college, like that kind of mindset. Like, mm-hmm. just go with it, you know? Applied to a few schools for football, but I was like, I don't even know if I want to do that. So when I went to RCC for 2 years, like my sophomore year, I felt like I was missing something and I couldn't pinpoint it. And then I was like, I'm missing that camaraderie, that team aspect. I'm missing football. So I decided, I reached out to one of my old coaches and I was like, I gotta give this a chance. Like, not, I don't know the exact numbers, but like how many high school athletes go on to play college football or any college sport, mm-hmm. right? So we made a plan and it was 2012 and went to his house. We did the whole workout plan. We did nutrition. We did everything. And on the plan, it's like, it was, I'll never forget. It was like a yellow, one of those, the book, there was like a book with the yellow paper with the lines or whatever, right? And on the bottom, he wrote, no drinking. And I said, no drinking? He was like, yeah, trust me. Like, I was like, it's that big of a deal? He's like, I'm like, all right, no problem. So 150 days, no alcohol. Like, and my first workout program I ever did, I really didn't start training until like senior year of high school, like P90X, Tony Horan.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't really start lifting weights until like the end of senior year of high school. So I'm like, all right, 150 days. We went balls to the wall. No drinking. Strength and conditioning. It was a bigger, faster, stronger program. I remember the whole program. Diet was on point, like one cheat meal a week. And ended up working really hard. I saw my numbers go up, got faster, had a speed and agility coach, and was grinding, man. And then ended up walking on to the SUNY Cortland football team.
Very cool.
Went to SUNY Cortland, played football there for a year. And then I decided not to play my senior year. I saw like two guys right in front of me basically tear their ACL during spring ball. And I was like, man, if something happens just to like maybe start on special teams, I'll never be a cop. Plus senior year, enjoy, because that was, when I went there, man, it was routine and structure, which I love and which I needed. And humans thrive on routine, but also mm-hmm. in recovery, man. It's much needed. So I ended up not playing senior year and then studied criminology and then graduated in 2014. And then...
Before you go there with the graduation, what's the difference between criminal justice and criminology?
Okay, so when I went to RCC, criminal justice, that's why I got my associate in criminal justice. Basically, some substance studying the law, procedures and stuff. Criminology, so I thought it was going to be the same thing when I went to Cortland, but on my mind was just, where can I play football? So Cortland, that was it. I don't care. I didn't care what I studied there. I want to play football. I went to school also, by the way, and this is about brotherhood and everything as well. That's why I'm talking about it. Two of my best friends, we went to elementary school together, middle school, high school, RCC. We went to Cortland together. And,
wow.
And
what are their names, man? Shout them out.
Anthony and Andrew, my guys. Yeah.
So, there you go.
Great friends. Just something about, you know, being a young man and having that brotherhood and the tribe and the fellowship like that, you know, it's kind of like the movie Stand By Me.
I'm not a movie guy, Frank. I'm not a movie guy. But crazy? I can't even lie here. People are going to go nuts. I haven't even heard of it. The only thing I've heard is that song, Stand By Me. Is there any?
It's in it. Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Great movie, by the way. We're going to have to maybe watch
it. We have a movie night.
Put it at the Ace event.
There you go. One.
Yeah. Fuck, awesome movie. But the one of the quotes from is like, you'll just never have the friends like you had like when you're 12 years old. And it's just so damn true. But I'm lucky that, you know, they're still in my life.
Yeah.
Graduated Cortland. So criminology is the study of basically why people would commit the types of crimes that they
more like psyche.
It was more of like a sociology and background.
So it's getting into the mind of the criminal.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So it's pretty cool.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
So doing a lot of studying like that, and even studying on like why people would lose their life to suicide, things like that. So Amelia Durkheim, the father of sociology, all these reading, and I'm like taking these classes and I'm just like, man, this is just like not making any sense, you know? And then I was like, then at the end and what I went through, I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense, right? So graduated in 2014, did some personal training jobs, worked as a physical therapist aide, and then 2015, 23 years old, NYPD Police Academy.
To the wolves.
That's it, man.
Okay, so what do you think? I remember being a part of Boy Scouts. but I don't really remember. And it's so ironic because I love routine. I love discipline. I've always loved it as a young kid. Like I used to want to always be strong. Like I was always compared to my grandfather, who was like he was the boss of the family. He had the voice. He had the stature. Like I always wanted to be a Navy veteran, police officer as well. Right, locally in Mamaroneck too. Great career. And I remember being in like Boy Scouts, never Eagle Scouts, but I never like continued with it for some reason. And it's ironic now that like even through ACE and all the men's development and that fellowship that you spoke about, it's so important to me. And I wonder if I stayed with that stuff, what the difference would be now. Do you think it's something that like you have a child now? Is that something that you're going to instill in him very early?
Boy Scouts? Yeah, I
what's the difference between Boy Scout and Eagle Scout?
Well,
graduation?
Eagle Scout's the highest rank of honor. Yeah. And the stats, like if we ran it, it's like, I don't know,
was a rookie, basically.
Basically 1% of people who joined Boy Scouts, or let's just say 5%, it's really low, will actually become an Eagle. So close by rank. And your Eagle Scout project is basically like you have this big project for the community, but you're at seven, whenever, you know, you have, once your 18th birthday, you can't be an Eagle Scout. So you have to do it before your 18th birthday. So you're a 17-year-old young man, right? Or teenage boy, man, whatever you want to call it. And like you have this project and you have to basically like, it's like running your own business. You have to have all the numbers. You have to have project management and everything like that.
Oh, wow.
So I repainted 228 fire hydrant markers in Congress, the stencils. So, and during like the, let's say for wintertime, the snow, if the snow is covering the street or leaves or anything like that, or it's dark and the leaves or the snow is covering the fire hydrant, the stencil, at least on the ground, can show this is where it's at. So, and a lot of them were like, I don't want to say destroyed, but defaced. So we went around the town, did all that. The first time I went to the board, I got destroyed. Oh, they shut me down. Really? Yeah. Like, yeah. So I had to go back, replan everything. And again, obviously with like the troop leaders and my father being a big help, and be more on point. And then it was, my birthday's May 17th. So it was a Friday, May 15th. I went for my final board at 17 years old. So this was it. If I got destroyed the second time, wouldn't have ever made it.
Wow.
And then made it through.
That's awesome.
So it was good. But yeah, definitely. It's just about responsibility and giving back and just learning life's tools. You know, like you're a young man, a young boy, and you're camping and you're in the woods without your parents at 13, 14. So
yeah.
It helps you, I would say, not even discover who you are, but give you confidence, you know, like, oh man, like I was just in 20 degree weather, you know, in a tent with me and one of the guys from school, Anthony, who is an Eagle Scout as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, create a lot of memories and stuff like that and just life-saving skills and just life skills like that. So it was a good time. But also from a parent's perspective, like you're out on a weekend on a trip or, you know, like you're staying out of trouble.
Well, I can't go back, but I wish I did. But I'll be part of the 99% that didn't make it. But no, it's really it's really great stuff. And you know what I do on a professional level, I'm a deputy commissioner in a local town in Westchester. So you know, very my department is community resources. So I'm very involved in the community. The community has been a huge part of my life forever. Product of the Boys and Girls Club in Mount Vernon, New York, where I grew up, and always was in programs and services to hopefully do what you did, but not on that Eagle Scout level. Talk to me a little bit about, I guess, what so going through the police academy in 2015, what that first 3 years kind of looked like, because that seems like even from the bio, 2018, 2019 was a real struggle. So I guess lead us up to, you know, what that struggle and those adverse moments look like for you.
Yeah. So 2015 in the academy for 6 months. Then after you graduate the 6 months, you go to a precinct.
As a FTO?
Yeah, you'd be in an FTO program, right? You're a cop, you graduate.
Yeah. Field training officer, right, is FTO?
Yeah, I'm not an FTO, but like you have an FTO, yes. For 6 months, after the 6 months academy.
Right.
So then I got sent to, you don't have a choice to where you want to go. You could put where you want. It depends on who you know.
And then they're like, you're not going there.
Yeah, so it was funny. I thought I was going to go somewhere in Manhattan, and then in the academy, they're like, all right.
Bronx,
you know, Frank Vos, they're like 42nd precinct. And for people that are listening, know where the 42nd precinct is. If not, it's in the South Bronx. It's by Yankee Stadium. And I had no idea where it was. And people are like, oh, shit, you know? And
yeah.
So here I am from Rockland County, you know, get sent to the South Bronx. And then I was just like, at first I'm like, holy shit, like where am I? You know, what is this? And then
what about it was like, what is this? Was it the and were you working like night shifts? Like what did you see that was different from Rockland County?
When I did the it's different now, the FTO program. Mm-hmm. But when I did it was 2 months of days, 2 months of 4 to 12s, and then 2 months of midnights. And then they put you on a steady tour, a steady shift. The average income where that is $28,000 to $32,000 per household. No hospitals, no highways. It's a lot of housing projects. So it was a reality check, like, wow, man, like people are really suffering. People like live in this like type of environment. Like this is, it's sad. It's messed up because Rockland County, you grew up as, you know, in parts of Westchester too, is like,
all of Westchester,
yeah,
pretty much
community based. You know, people know everybody, support, and the same thing there. But it's different because like even the outside of the community, I don't know, like people know about the broken windows theory. It's a theory in the criminal justice world, right? It's like, if a neighborhood looks broken, more crime is going to happen. X, Y, and Z, and just like the street itself, it was just like, I want to use this word, but it's like dirty. And it's not, and I'm not blaming the community at all. In anything, there's not just one person or one group to blame. Everybody has responsibility, especially as a community. Our job is to support each other and be there for each other. So we, like you were saying, so we can live, learn, and pass on. That's what I think about it. Being a human being is, there's not a Frank Island or a Dave Island. There's 7 billion of us on this planet for a reason, you know? I know I'm going on a little tangent here, but...
No, it's good.
Also a lot of different cultures, you know? I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, you know? So my partner, my first partner, shout out to Willie R. He was Dominican Republic from, you know, he's Dominican. So learning that culture. And as time went on, like learning all these different types of cultures and ethnicities, and it was awesome, you know, because I wasn't exposed to that. So over time, you get to... introduced to more different types of people and like that. And but it was a rough neighborhood, man. It's a lot of violent crime. You see a lot of things that you didn't even at first you didn't know that was possible, right? A lot of drugs, and a lot of people that are just lost, you know, and they're lost in regards to not knowing where they are, but lost in themselves, lost in their minds, lost in their souls. And that's what it was. That's, you know, unfortunately a lot of that is still today. But as a cop, you play many different roles in your life. Like you're not just going to fight crime, man. You be a psychologist. You take people to the hospital, you know, you do some first aid. There's like so many different hats you can wear. And in this job, you can really help a lot of people, you know? But at the end of the day, like you can only really save yourself. There's like only so many times you can try to talk to someone to do the right thing, but you don't have control over that, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you can accept that, be like, I can take care of myself and try to be as positive as I can. I think positivity passes around. I think it's contagious.
Yeah,
right?
It is. It definitely is. I love your perspective on this stuff, man. And I love your perspective on even the difference in culture and environment, because I see it in government all the time. You know, it's almost like there's definitely more funding that goes to different areas, and that's just a proven, you know, government fact, whether you're on a local level, state level, federal level. And it's like, why is that, right? I had a recent experience with a youth employee who was like 16, 17 years old, basically leaves, this was the story we got, leaves mid-shift and doesn't return to work. And basically, he went home and fell asleep was the story. So like, you know, we're like hammering him, like, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, this is not how an employee works. You know, you have to have responsibility, blah, blah. And it wasn't until like I guess we made him feel comfortable enough to open up. The poor kid didn't eat in like 2 days. He was extremely tired because he works an overnight job as well, helping support the family. And again, this is in an area of Westchester that predominantly has money, but this one centralized location, it does not, right? And there's definitely not the same outpour of financial support in this one area of the community. So anyway, you know, when he said that, and so really what happened is he went home on his lunch break and ate and fell asleep because he hadn't, you know, slept in 2 days and he hadn't eaten in days. And it was really sad, man. And I'm like, wow, this is right in our backyard. So I could just totally relate to that. And also just to anybody listening, you know, you never really know whether it's a child or whether it's an adult. You never really know what that person is going through. So if somebody doesn't smile at you for a day, really control, listen to what Frank is saying, you know, control the things that you can control. And there's no reason why you can't smile at and tell that person to have a good day, because too often we're like, well, you didn't smile at me. I'm guilty of this too, right? Like, you didn't smile at me. I remember the other day, like, I held the door for a guy and immediately I hold the door and I'm like waiting for the thank you. And then I get the door, the next door intentionally. And, you know, I said to him, sir, you're welcome. And he goes, I'm sorry, man. My mom is in the hospital. Mm. And I'm like, asshole. Mm. Asshole, yeah. Asshole, asshole. But here I am, like, you shouldn't do things out of reciprocity, right? Reciprocity is like seeking out something in return. And really all I wanted him to say was thank you, but I was going to get the door anyway. But here I am. I couldn't just stay quiet, dude. Like, just open the door because you want to be a nice, kind individual. And here I am. Now the poor dude's got a mom in the hospital or something like that. Just you never really know.
Yeah, that's so even powerful for you sharing that.
Humbling.
Expectations, right? When we expect something and we don't get it, how do we react?
Yep.
Even something so small like that.
But it's not, right? Because you know me, and like I could be a little aggressive at times. So I said, "You're welcome, sir." And he said, "I'm so sorry, man. You know, my mom's in the hospital. It's got me a little messed up." And the way that he said it and he looked up, he was sorry that he didn't say thank you, but like my heart dropped.
Right.
It really dropped. And I was like, wow. You got to do better, Dave.
He was somewhere else. He wasn't present.
100%. Right. And that's fine. Like, and I should be okay with that. But it's so hard, man. So, all right, keep going. Talk to me now, I guess, about how we get to 2018 and 2019.
Yeah,
and
yeah. What, so 2015, right? 2016, I was there. 2017, 4-12s. 23 years old. And my life was just being a cop, man, working out and going out on the weekends. Like, that's all I cared about. And I thought that's what life was going to be for my whole career. Life was great. Like I said, my girlfriend at the time, household, my parents were great. Dad was always a big drinker. We'll get into that. But, you know, I had a great upbringing, and life was just good. Good response. Like we talked about the boy, all this, like football and Boy Scouts was just like, was really great to prepare me for what I'm about to go into, right? So I ended up taking the test for Rockland County to become a police officer in Rockland County, New York, and I ended up doing very well. And I left. And at that time, too, like a lot of people were like, oh, you got to leave NYPD, X, Y, and Z, get out of here. And I'm like, all right, like thinking about it, but like Westchester, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe like Scarsdale, right? It's right. Closer to home, safer, more money. It's like the lottery. It's like the police lottery, right? So 2018, I go to Rockland County. I did it. 25 years old, Dave, I made it. Got the Willy Wonka golden ticket. And it's kind of like throwing up the middle finger to like, you know, the city and NYPD. Like, I'm out of here, right? Like F you guys, like, you know, not like laughing at it, but it's like also at the same time, listening to those old timers and like living through other people's experiences that I didn't live, because the job never did. I would go to work and I was pretty good with like leaving at home. Like once I crossed that Tappan Zee Bridge or that George Washington Bridge, like didn't think about work. Went home, did whatever I did. And when I went to Rockland and I got there, it was like a big slap in the face of like reality. And it was, I couldn't get out of my own head. So I got in 2018 of January, put a lot of pressure on myself growing up. Like, I don't want to say like, it was like a story in my mind, man. You know, it's like kind of like when we're younger and we have a vision and we're creating like, this is how our life has to go. And if it doesn't go this way, the way that we just created this story in our head, then like I'm a failure or my life is ruined. And this is how it was supposed to go. So 2018, couldn't get out of my own head. Should I stay? Should I go? Put a lot of pressure on myself. Knowing people where I grew up, I just felt like I couldn't escape. I'm like, do I want to do this for like 20 years in my hometown? See, like, just over and over again. And that's what it just kept, it was like an OODA loop in my head. And I started feeling like, at 25, I didn't even know depression or anxiety was real. Cause I'd always be like, how could people be so upset? Like, life is great. And that's what I was going back about the way I grew up in my family. Like, life is great. Like, depression is not real. Like, get over it type of deal. And then I couldn't stop thinking, like, should I stay or should I go? That song, should I stay or should I go? Right?
Yep.
And then I got my first panic attack ever. And I don't like to call it panic attack, but fight, flight, or freeze, right? That's what happened. And I said, what's going on? You know? And I basically put my body into, like, this hypervigilant state of constant, like, adrenaline and constant. And it wasn't even adrenaline of, like, me, like, doing police work. It was just me getting myself, like, so hyped up about this situation. Like, do I stay? Do I leave? Because this is not, like, Dave, this is not, like, do I get McDonald's or Wendy's? This is, like, a big, this is my career. This is my life. This is, like, what I worked so hard to be, like, envisioned, like, to be a cop. And then making it in Rockland is, like, making a lot of first responders would say, especially in the areas, like, you made it. Like, I don't want to say, like, the Yankees, you made it. And I said, all right. At that time, I was drinking on my off days. And I would drink one or two days, but it wasn't one or two drinks. It was, if we were going out, Dave, we're having 20 drinks. And unfortunately, I would be a blackout drinker for most of the time. And I'm also a cop. So who can I tell about this, like, the way I'm feeling? And I just got to this department. I can't tell anybody. They'll take my gun and shield away, then my life is over, I'm done. So I decided to hang out with Jack and Jose a little more often. And then as time, a few months went by, I started to realize that I was more isolated. I would never drink by myself. I started drinking by myself. Me and my girlfriend at the time moved into an apartment together, thinking that would fix everything. Oh, I'll do this, kind of like a cover up, right? I'll make her happy. We'll forget about this. I barely took care of the apartment. Didn't even get cable. I didn't do anything as a provider or a man should do for his girlfriend in the house at the time. And I started to suffer hardcore. And that's where it started to spiral. That drinking started to turn up to, got rid of social media, right? Big into fitness and stopped working out. I remember drinking for a while, a green tea from Dunkin' and one shake a day. I couldn't eat. So I went from a solid 185 to 165. I slowly saw myself start to wither away. And then people started to notice you're right. And I was yeah, I'm fine. But there's only so much you can try to fake it to make it. Mm-hmm. But it was really taking over. So I ended up seeing a therapist. Couldn't tell anybody, right, in my head. So I would pay off the books. Oh, I can't let the job find out through insurance. If they find out, I'm going to lose my job and all that stuff. That was the way of thinking. That therapist ultimately was a huge part of helping me save my life and on my hero journey. So I did that for a little bit. And then I saw a nurse practitioner in psychiatry, which I don't know if it was changing for the, I would say it was an experience. It's part of my journey, but I ended up being on seven different SSRIs, antidepressants, within a span of 6 months.
Wow.
So I told the symptoms I was saying of just a lot of anxiety, couldn't make a decision. So that decision that turned into should I stay or should I go ended up becoming a decision in everything I did. What do I wear? Should I take a shower now? What do I eat? And then 20, 30 minutes would go by. I still didn't make that decision. So now I was going in my everyday life. Told her how I was feeling. And all right. They gave me, she's like, okay, here's Seroquel and Prozac. That once I started that medication, that was the first time I ever had suicidal ideations in my lifetime. I remember laying in bed with my girlfriend and just hearing voices. I'm not hearing voices. I'm replaying the conversations that I would have because I would ask a lot of people for advice, which too much advice is not good. It goes back to living through other people's experiences, not my own. I have to make my decision at the end of the day for me. And I think a lot of people and a lot of, we're on the topic of young men, look up to other people also that they don't really know. And they think that since they did it this way, they have to do it that way. But like you said, nobody knows if you're going home in the house you grew up in, or you're not sleeping for 2 days. Nobody knows what's going on behind that closed door. So I took that medication. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is, I don't care if I want to live or die anymore. So I said, why would I feel like this? And then, you know, I mean, the symptoms were crazy. Chills, shakiness. I felt like a little rabbit, like just like really fearful. I'm like, what the hell's going on? From college football, competitive powerlifting, all this stuff, right? I talk about, and I always thought I was like a tough guy from that, right? But that's like the ego controlling you. It don't matter how much weight you can lift or how hard you go on the field, man. When this hits you and life hits you and it takes over, you just got to be ready to have that support group and to be honest with yourself. And I wasn't honest with myself, Dave, at all. I kept trying to run. And I would run faster, faster, and longer, farther away. So I had a good idea. I was like, I'm still in the apartment. I'm like, I'll stop the medication because I don't want to feel like this. Which, if people are listening, SSRIs, very powerful antidepressants, right? Don't quit that cold turkey, man. This is very powerful with your brain chemistry. So I cut a cold turkey and I would just drink again. Because that's all I knew. So then we go back and forth. I would go on a different medication. So, and I'm naming these medications because maybe listeners have taken them. Mm-hmm. Zoloft for a little bit, Wellbutrin. Then I remember she like pulled out the drawer. She's like, try this new medication, Rexulti. Now I just feel like a lab rat. I just feel like, what the hell is going on? Like, life was great. Like, I had the job I want. I'm in this department. And now I'm like, man, I started realizing like, I'm really doing this to myself. But then I would beat myself up even more. Like, curse myself off in my head, talk really negative to myself. So I call out sick a lot from work. Like, it was just not good, but it was just trying to hide it, you know, but there was no hiding it. So I did that for like 10 months, a lot of isolation, just a lot of darkness, man. Stopped showering, just like really major signs of depression. And, I ended up going back to the city after 10 months. After you have up to a year to go back. So went through the process to go back. And people too, like, I live in a small town. So people heard I wanted to go back. Like, oh, what are you doing? You're crazy. You ruined your life. Don't do it. Like, this is like the best job. Like, give it more time. Then I'm like, oh man, maybe I am going to ruin my life. Maybe this is a wrong decision. Right. And then I was just stuck. No matter where I was in my life, all I could think about was, should I stay or should I go? I was that guy that you held the door open for, man, all the time. I would go to Dunkin' Donuts by myself and just sit there for 3 hours and just think and like try to like go to these weird, like, I don't want to say weird places. Sorry, I take that back. But just places where people wouldn't see me. I didn't want people to see me. And I didn't want to be around anybody because I didn't want anyone to see me suffering. And I didn't want to just be around like positive energy. I was going to say it was strange at the time, but it makes perfect sense. Like, when you're in that depression, that type of energy connects to isolation. Like, when you're isolated, you don't want to be like, positive people attract positive people. Mm-hmm. People with substance abuse attracts people with substance abuse. So I was really isolated, man. And then I went back to the city, but by that time I was walking dead. I said, I was like, like a sheet, like a towel in the wind, man, on a clothesline. Just so I went back to the city at the November of 2018. And everyone was like, oh man, Frank, what happened? Like, it was that bad. And I was just like, it wasn't for me, you know? So I still really, really skinny for myself, not eating. My girlfriend at the time left because she was getting sick too. Like, she was trying to love me so much for me to love myself. But if I didn't love myself, you can't love someone. And this is what I learned too. You can love someone so much, but at the end of the day, they have to make that change and they have to love themselves. You can't love someone to death for them to make a change. And that's a tough reality because a lot of people think that they can love someone and do something for a lot of people and then they'll change. I don't believe that, man. Mm-hmm. So I lasted maybe a week or two in November 2018 back into the city. And then my family was really worried about me, rightfully so. And thankful for them and love them very much. And then I walked into New York Presbyterian Hospital in Manhattan in 2018.
Wow. Are you looking to elevate your brand with captivating visuals and immersive sound? Look no further than the home of the No Snooze podcast, Kaiyi Visions Productions, your go-to destination for cutting-edge audio and video production. At Kai Visions, we don't just create content. We create experiences that leave a lasting impact. From podcasts, YouTube variety shows, sleek corporate videos, to attention-grabbing promotional campaigns, our team of experts is dedicated to turning your vision into reality. Choose Kai Visions for a production experience like no other. It's time to make your brand known. Contact us today at kaivisions@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Kai Visions. Kai Visions Productions, where audiovisual excellence meets innovation. Now, back to the epi. Frank, I'm sitting here while you're, you know, explaining the story and half the story. From the time, from the moment that you spoke about the hero journey with the therapist, the chill started like coming through me at that very moment, because I just think that people like that are real heroes in this world, man. You know, like if that therapist at that time wanted to just say, no, man, you know, I only deal with insurance and like, you know, we need to tell your job about, maybe this doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, maybe somebody's not there for you in that moment. And maybe you're not here to tell this story. Your clarity on your understanding of how you got to where you're at is impeccable, man. And the way that you tell this story is,
I'm
lost for words, honestly. And now I know that this is how, and again, this is a concept. I think that it's got to be the concept of the year for me already. And it's only the end of, oh, well, the beginning of March. Well, middle of March now. You're most qualified to help the person that you used to be. It's a very consistent thing that I see with successful people. And now success to me does not just mean financial. It means clarity in the mind. Mm. You know, that really is success. Like a successful father has clarity in his mind on how he wants to be with his children. A successful businessman has clarity amongst the relationships that he has in the workplace. A successful partner, you know, has the understanding and the compassion and the empathy to be there for their girlfriend, spouse, you know, whatever relationship it is. That's real success to me. I mean, I think that's something that we're chasing every day, but your level of that type of success, at least from the outside looking in, man, is really where I want to be. Mm. And I mean that, man.
I appreciate that a lot, man. Thank you. And, you know, I've told this story so many times, dude, like so many times. Mm-hmm. But like right now, I feel like I never explained it this way. And I'm being honest, man. So bear with me here. I appreciate it because I'm definitely feeling it. And I never thought of what you just said about the therapist, because a lot of the sessions, I just repeated myself. Said the same thing over and over again. He could have just been like, you know what, Frank, like, I can't help you anymore. But he stuck with it.
He did.
He was like he helped champion my journey. He was like, I compare it. I'm a big like video game Marvel nerd and all that. Like, he was my, let's just say, he was like my wizard. He was my Gandalf. He was like always there believing in me, and he couldn't do it for me. But when I got to that next little step or that next level, he was waiting for me. I said, I knew you would make it. Let's go. You know, this is what you got to do for your next quest. And when you do the quest, I'll be there for you. Just believe in yourself. Know that you can get through this quest, and I'll be there for you.
So I wish people can, I mean, they're listening to it, but they can't feel, I think, what we feel right now, because I feel very, emotionally attached to this story. And I shared, you know, and I've shared with the podcast listeners too, in the audience, about my journey with my mom, but also my own journey through therapy, man. It changed my life. Dave Regina was a guy who like looked really good on the outside, but was really bad on the inside. And ruined a lot of relationships in his past, and resorted to a lot of aggression as a form of just not dealing with my issues. Let me turn up so you go away. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the past, Jesus Christ, I mean, I was 26, 27 when I started that journey, and I'm 34 now. You know, and my guy Mike, man, therapist of mine, he's a hero of mine too, you know. And I've really encouraged and spoke to a lot of my close friends to you know, just take that leap, man. Like, it's hard though, because my experience was in person. I don't know about yours. Was yours in person, or was
you talking about therapy?
Yeah So I do think
something different. There's something different.
100%. So I've tried the over the phone or on Zoom, even with Mike, and it's not the same. So like I've really been a big proponent of one therapy, but also trying to find somebody that you can really, connect with. Because, I mean, it takes 5 or 6 times just for this person to really get an understanding of who you are. But therapy in itself, man, I'm just a huge proponent of it. So yeah, man. So, all right. So now you're walking into Presbyterian. Is this your moment of like, was that the darkest moment for you?
We're about to pick up, man. Are you ready to go off?
Let's go, bro, man.
Real quick about that therapy thing.
Yes.
I think it's huge to just clarify. I look at it like this. Most people look at different schools, right? And I think a lot of people, if they don't have just, they go through different relationships. If you have a therapist that's not working for you, don't just say therapy's not for me.
Right.
Shop around. Find the person that is right for you,
yep,
for your lifestyle, for your behavior, for your past, and don't give up on it. I just wanted to put that out there. Because so many people I talk to, I tried therapy. Dude, you tried it for 1 month. This shit, sorry for cursing.
No, you're good. You're good.
This shit takes, it took me 2 years to face that fear and to face myself. And this is not a part-time job, Dave. I still hit meetings. And we'll get into it. I do this every day. I have to do this every day because I don't want to be a statistic and I want to live. Mm.
And also, you know, and this gets a little bit deep in terms of the accountability for people who are listening. It's taken you 25 years, 35 years, 45 years, depending on how old you are, to develop the bad habits that you have. So what in the world makes you think that you're going to be able to completely reverse this in 1 therapy session, 2 months of therapy, 3 months of therapy? When you were talking, Frank, I put up the peace sign because that's what people do. They meet one person and then they're just out.
They dip. Yeah.
That's it. They run from therapy. If you really want to change your life, you have to begin to change the behaviors that got you to where you are. And the way to do that is talking to somebody about it. It's not a one-all be-all in terms of a fix right away, but there are actionable steps that these qualified individuals are going to provide you with. And then it's on you to take the accountability and try to move forward with your life.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. Once it starts getting uncomfortable, that's when the real work starts. That's just the start.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where growth happens.
Yep.
That's where change happens. That's how a caterpillar, right, goes into the cocoon, and that's when the stress happens. If it bails out on that stress, it never becomes a butterfly.
Mm.
So yeah, my little caterpillar ass walked right into New York Presbyterian Hospital. and my aunt is a doctor, and like, you need to go to Presbyterian. And I mean, I was going to say I didn't have a choice. Of course I had a choice, but I just did it. Walked into Presbyterian in Manhattan. Then PBA came and took my gun and shield away. And I was like, all right, this is it. You know, I'm done, but I'm here. So I told them the story for like the 100th time. And they're like, all right. And my buddy, let's go back real quick. My buddy from, and this is what I'm talking about here. My buddy, Andrew, the one that, when I said Anthony, Andrew, mm-hmm. Andrew, the other one, my parents drove me and he came with me he came all the way down in the car mm-hmm. with me to Presbyterian. That's what I'm kind of talking about, you know, side by side. He didn't even have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
He was just next to me. And I really, really felt that. Wow. Okay. So I'm in Presbyterian and, doing the evaluation inside. And I didn't know at the time, it was like when I first walked in, I didn't know what it was gonna be. Then I noticed it was the psych section, which makes sense. All right. They're like, oh, we feel bad for you. It was a guy and a girl. And sign this paper here. We'll get you some help. Like, we'll be able to help you out. I'm like, all right, sign the paper. So then I go upstairs to a room, beautiful room, dude, overlooking Manhattan, like a glass window, something like out of a movie. I remember like looking outside and seeing Manhattan, and like just like a little piece of like tranquility, a little sense of peace. And in the back of my head, like the small voice, the fire that kept on fighting, I remember like saying like, all right, Frank, you're not dead yet. Like, you can, because I couldn't, the scariest thing, man, was that I couldn't feel for a long time. Like, I couldn't feel anything. And that's like you couldn't feel good. You couldn't feel bad. You couldn't feel happy. You just didn't feel. Like, I would always say, if me and my mom were walking down the street and someone robbed her and started beating her up, I would just stand there and watch. Like, that's how bad the feeling was. Mm. I couldn't feel anything. When I felt that a little bit, I'm like, all right, you're still in here. Like, you know? So I slept. I told the nurse, I'm like, all right, pump me up with whatever you got to fall asleep. And tomorrow we'll see what it brings. So wake up. They're like, all right, we're going to take you to the our Westchester Center. Like, all right. So go downstairs. There's an ambulance. I'm like, whoa, wait, what, hold up. I'm like, yeah, you got to go in the ambulance. I'm like, all right. You got to go on a stretcher. I'm like, whoa, hold up, hold up. I don't need to go in no stretcher. I'm just sitting in the back of the ambulance and we'll ride. He's like, no, it's protocol. So I'm on a stretcher from Manhattan to go to Westchester, go out, and then we walk into Westchester Presbyterian and go through security. And all right, take your shoes off, take your socks off, take your shirt, put this guy, whoa, hold up. Little did I know that it was Presbyterian, it was a psych ward.
Oh my God.
So I'm like, oh, this is where we're at. We're here. So now it's hitting me. At 28 years old, I've put people into a psych ward through my job. I've now been in one. I've arrested people. I was arrested at 16. There's a lot of life experience that's happening to me. And I'm going to go back to this later, why, when I'm in rehab. But so I'm in psych ward, man, 2 weeks, can't leave. Told them the truth of, not the whole truth yet, but I didn't want to live, you know? I don't care if I lived or died. Suicide ideations, and can't just let me leave. So 23 hours and 50 minutes a day of doing nothing. 10 minutes, a doctor would come, like a movie, white coats, all this stuff. They talk to you for 10 minutes, that's it. Shout out to my roommate, Nick. I hope you're still out there, man. Nick was a very smart cat, but he was very, very lost. This guy can recite the DSM-5 to you back and forth, but he just had a lot of psychological issues, a lot of trauma. Funny guy. He would be like, all right, Frank, let's put some miles on today. It was just like, that means walking up and down the hallway, right? Yeah. A lot of sick people, psychosis, schizophrenia. I walked down the hallway, Dave, with this girl who had a book on her head like this. And she would say, very smart girl. We had some in-depth talks about plants and things like that and gardens.
Gardens.
But she said, and she's being dead serious, man. She was saying, be careful what you say. The Russians, they have a camera in my eye. They can hear everything we're saying. And she was being absolutely dead serious. So, and I was in there, man. I couldn't leave. We went outside maybe twice a week. Medication time, meal time, group, right? So I'm there, and this guy approaches me. Stewie. And he goes, I know you. And I go, you know me? I don't know this guy from a hole in the wall. He goes, yeah, I know you. I said, where do you know me from? He goes, the Bronx. So now I'm thinking like, oh, great. Like,
I arrested him.
So I'm like, okay. He's like, you drive a silver car? I'm like, yeah. And this is a true story. You drive a silver car? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you drive over the McCone Stand Bridge? I go, yeah, the bridge that connects Yankee Stadium right there. When you get off the throughway 87. Yeah. He goes, you gave me $20 one day. I said, holy shit. You're the guy that stands at the bridge every day. I saw Stewie for so long, man, asking for money. And one day, I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I opened up my wallet. I had $20. I said, listen, man, I could tell you, don't buy this. Don't do that. You're going to make your own decision. I see you out here all the time. Just have a good day. And he remembered that.
Wow.
Mind blowing.
Wow.
So that was just, it was kind of like, there's a book out there, The Five People You Meet in Heaven. It was just very, very strange. Yeah. So 2 weeks go by, family visits, a lot of my friends visit, nice. Still no contact with my ex-girlfriend at the time. Missing her like crazy and all that stuff. And I leave. I got put on another medication called Effexor. So I leave and I kind of do the Joker laugh because I'm like, everything's still the same. I'm not fixed yet. And as cops, especially as cops, but people, but especially as cops, I say, we want everything right now. We think we can control everything. We think we can change everything. It has to happen right now. So what did I do? Next day, I went back. I said, I'm not fixed. And I said, I got to tell you something. And they said, what? I said, I've been drinking. They're like, drinking? Like, yeah, how much? And I told them, like, why didn't you tell us that in the first place? I said, well, I didn't know it was a big deal. And they were like, all right, that, you know, changes a lot. Read this book. I'm like, all right. So they give me this book and I'm looking at it. And I'm like, this is a pretty big book. What's it called? They're like, it's a big book. I said, no, I know it's a big book. I said, what is this book? They said, it's the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. Read the first part, the doctor's opinion. So I'm like, all right. I mean, I remember Nick. We're in the room together, roommates. He wanted to shut up. I'm trying to read. I'm like, Nick, I'm trying to read this. I can barely focus right now, man. Give me like, took me like an hour to read like 20 pages. It's like, oh, and he's telling me about, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's funny. When I went back, Nick was in the breakfast room, the whatever you would call it, the cafeteria. And I walk in, he's eating cereal. And he looks up and I see him and he drops his spoon. He goes, oh no, you're back. He's like, I don't know if it's better. I don't know if it's worse in here or out there. Like, what are they doing to you, Frank? I said, Nick, I don't know, man, but I'm with you probably for another 2 to 3 weeks. So, yeah, doctor's opinion. And what I got out of it was, and reading it again, but then it was like, they talk about having a allergic reaction to your brain with alcohol. I'm like, wow, you know, maybe I can't handle alcohol. Maybe I'm allergic to it. But it just sat with me for a while.
Wait a second. So is that why people who are in recovery, a lot of them refer to the allergy?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought my mom was being funny. She's like, oh, David, I'm allergic. I'm allergic. Or if she sees it, she's like, oh, I'm allergic.
Yep.
So I thought it was like a, but then I've heard multiple people talk about the allergy. So there's science to this.
Well, when the AA was created in like the, like I want to say the 40s or 50s, and anyone who's in AA, you know, I'm sorry if I got that wrong, but they did a lot of spiritual work, man, because they couldn't figure out, like, the Bill and Bob, they were trying to just heal themselves and they couldn't get it. You have a doctor, you have a great guy in Wall Street, and they tried so many times. And one of them went to Europe to see Carl Jung, who was huge, one of the famous psychologists, and they thought he could fix them. And he was like, I can't help you. The only way you're ever going to get through this is through a higher power and a spirituality and not by yourself. And then that's where they created, you know, that. And there is science, though, that shows that pre-genetic disposition to alcohol, where people in your gene and your DNA will either, if you drink and you get adrenaline rush and you get hyped up, right, you got to say to yourself, that's a red flag.
It is.
If today is Wednesday and you're thinking about what you're going to drink on Friday, maybe we might have a little problem. I can never call anyone an alcoholic, dude. Mm-hmm. I can never do it. It doesn't matter. I always say it doesn't matter how much you drink or what you drink. It's what happens to you when you drink.
Right.
If it's affecting your job, your family life, your inner peace, if you're having to the core guilt and shame and only you can be honest with yourself, then you might kind of say, oh, maybe I do have a problem. Mm-hmm. But then there's other people that have genes where they have one or two drinks and they start shaking out. They get flushed. Their skin, they have a bad reaction to it. Their body doesn't want them to drink. Like, oh man, I don't like it. It's like rosacea and things like that. I wish I had that one, but
I know. Well, honestly, so I thought you were going to the other route. So like, you take my sister and I. My sister's we came from the same genes, obviously. Like same mom, same dad. And my mom and I always make fun of her because we were like, well, I wish that could be me. So she'll have one glass and be like, I'm going to go to sleep now. Like she's very, very in control, like gets a little tired, wants to go to sleep. Whereas like me, you know, I get that rush and I'm like, let's go. So I just recently listened to Andrew Huberman's 2-hour podcast on alcohol and the chemical effect in the brain and actually what it does. So what you're speaking on is exactly what I was just, you know, listening to and I've actually spoken about.
It's funny you said that. I've watched that 3 times. I did a whole PowerPoint on it. It's amazing.
It's really groundbreaking stuff. And honestly, I think everyone's relationship with alcohol would change if you listen to that podcast. Like me, I was sharing with you off air. You know, I'm only 70 something days into the journey here. And again, I am proud that I've caught it. I think before like the disease catches you. Mm-hmm. But there are many times that I've been like, whoa, like, what am I doing? You know, like, what's the point of this? I seek alignment in my life. Right. And that's like one thing that like, when I do drink, I'm not in alignment with me as a father, me as a businessman, you know, me in a relationship, me in the gym and what I stand for and the health. I've battled Crohn's disease my entire life since I was 16 years old. Like, having one or two is okay. Like that's okay for me. Right. But like, why would I be out on a Saturday night, you know, until 2-3 in the morning? Like just, that's not in alignment with me. So that was my focal point as I tried to shift into the new year. So I was very successful with Dry January and I've been going ever since.
Love it.
Yeah, man. And I shared, you know, mom has been sober 5+ years. She's, you know, my hero and literally my best friend. So I know you can empathize with,
100%,
mom.
Man. And I'm proud of the work that you're doing, man.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this statistic here. And I think this has a lot to do with how Reps for Responders kind of came about. But is this accurate? Every 72 hours, a law enforcement officer commits suicide?
I couldn't tell you. I don't. I mean,
it was on a very credible website through, like, you know, it's called Blue
Help.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then
that would be pretty credible.
Every 72 hours. Think about that. That's 24, 48, 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Every 3 days, a law enforcement officer commits suicide.
Yeah, they can make that could because the number in 2019 was like 238 for the whole year for the country. So, I want to fast forward through all that to lead up to this right here, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Got through Presbyterian. I did another 2 weeks real quick. So I did 6 weeks total. 2 weeks down in there inpatient, got out. Now it's 2019, right? The start of 20. I spent Christmas there. I got a bar of soap and a hat. I'll never forget spending Christmas in a psych ward. Knocked that off the bucket list. And then the job starts interviewing me and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother, that could be a podcast on, you know, mental health of health departments, whatever. So I ended up volunteering to go to High Watch Recovery in Kent, Connecticut from February of 2019 to April of 2019, which is inpatient rehab, aka we call it the farm in police world. But I went to the inpatient rehab, didn't want to go. My mom, she's like, can you please go to this? Like, no, I'm not going to another inpatient place. No way. Something took a hold of me. I said, you know what? I'm going to go. I went. First 2 weeks, I was a zombie. Was put on another medication. And then I ended up putting the work and learned a lot more about AA. We had group settings. I was in a dorm with like 14 guys. And then that's where it hit me that when I was talking about this before is I was with like lawyers, doctors, homeless people, everyday people.
Doesn't
like this,
discriminate.
This disease, thank you, doesn't give a crap who you are, man. Get a grasp of you, it doesn't matter. You get sober, it's waiting for you doing push-ups in the parking lot. Come on, Frank. One's not going to hurt you. You deserve this, right? So High Watch, shout out to High Watch Recovery. It was great. So I got out in April of 2019 of rehab. So started putting some days together and stuff like that. And I got sent to a different unit in the city, like desk duty. But it ended up at first, I'm like, great, here we go again. People are going to judge, going to find out. And it's kind of like a misfit, Rudolph, lost toys. Then I started being more honest. Like, what do I got to hide? Like, I'm already here. And at that time, I was like that 185 to 165. Now I'm 215. I was never over 200 pounds in my life. I was trying to get to 200 pounds naturally. Could never do it. But with the medication and holding on the water weight and then eating a lot more sugar and carbohydrates for that dopamine to feel good, a lot of people in recovery, when they get sober, they'll go to the sugary stuff. What alcohol has a lot of sugar in it. Mm-hmm. So to get that same hit and that dopamine and the endorphins, it's just so much easier to pick up a drink or food than go for a walk or lift some heavy weight or go into an ice plunge and things like that. So April 2019, I got out and then put a few times, like I would put a few weeks sober here. And then drink a little bit here, a month there. So then summer of 2019 hit and I had a good idea. I said, all right, Frank, you're starting to feel a little better. You still have your job. I'll only drink at the Yankee games or the Jersey Shore when no one will know who I am. Now, obviously, that didn't work out because no matter where you go in life, if you're running from yourself. Mm-hmm. You're always with yourself. You ain't running from yourself. You can go across the world. You can go wherever. You can get in a new relationship. If you don't do what you got to do, what we're talking about, it's always going to be there. So that didn't work out. And September 23, 2019 is when the journey really started. So my girlfriend, ex-girlfriend came back in my life, heard I was getting sober. So we were talking here and there. I asked her if she wanted to go to a wedding. She said, yeah. I was like, oh, wow. So September 22nd, went to a wedding. Not going to drink. Outside, beautiful ceremony. Walking to the reception, you know what they had for me? They knew I was going to be there, Dave. They got me good. They got me nice. Waterfall of Ciroc. Game over.
Wow.
And she drove my car home. And I, you know, I'm like, all right, be cool. I thought it was cool. And then, you know, I don't remember the last hour or two. Went to the dog park. Had a huge talk. And that's in AA terms called a spiritual awakening. And she was like, why are you doing this to yourself? Like, basically, some of the substance, why are you punishing yourself? I said, you know what? She's like, you still have your friends. You have your job. I'm in your life. I'm about to walk away again. I'm like, you know what? I'm done talking. Like, I'm really done talking about it. Like, I'm going to do it. And at that time, though, I did it because I didn't want to lose her. That's the start of my recovery. So I'm like, all right, I'll get in my mind. I'll get sober. You know, I won't lose her. Everything will be good. But I didn't put sobriety for myself first yet at that point. So I went to a meeting, AA meeting. Then the next day I went to another meeting, and it was trickle down effect. Then I started like getting back into the gym, but I would go to the gym, Powerhouse, Nanuet. I was going to the gym at the time 24/7, but I was still battling with some insecurities of, I would go really late at night, like after work, I did a 4 to 12 or like 9, 10 when I'm off, because I didn't want people to see. Mm-hmm. Right. So I would get back in the gym working hard. I'm like, all right, let's do this. So then I started doing a lot of research, because in 2019, leading up 2019, NYPD had 10 officers lose their lives to suicide. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, cause I was still battling it. But in my mind, I was like, it might sound sad to say, but like, I kind of understand it. Like, I didn't know any of these guys, but like, I felt like I did. Mm-hmm. And that spiritual connection. Cause like, damn, no one knew, like, people knew I was going through a hard time, and I was in the dark forest. I was in the labyrinth, but they didn't know how close it was for me being that number 11. Like, that's when it hit me. And I'm like, if I was number 11, who might have was close to being 12, 13, or 14? And I'm like, all right, something has to change. And I don't know where to start, but I do know that working out, eating as good as you can, and talking with like-minded individuals about your day, good or bad, has really helped me. And I started doing more research. Like, I flipped that switch to the addiction to just reading and reading and reading and reading and research on first responder mental health. 20% of everyday people suffer from trauma, depression, anxiety. It increases to 30% for first responders. 1 in 5 officers have a suicidal ideation in their lifetime while they're working or retired. So an ideation means not a plan, but it could just be like, if I go to work today and something happens, I don't care. Or I'm driving home, I hope my car wraps around a tree. Or if I get into a shooting. Average age of a cop, 57 to 65. After 5 years post-retirement, 50% of officers have a major cardiovascular issue. So I'm like, whoa, like, what's going on? Stress. And like, you don't, like, you hear about in the academy and the job, but everyone runs from it and hides. Not me. It's not going to happen to me. It's not going to happen to me. So I said, what are we going to do? And I said, this is what we're going to do. I said, I think the job needs to step up. So, and someone has to step up. And I just took that responsibility of, I don't know if anybody's going to, and a big part of it too, Dave, was like, is anyone ever going to trust me again after I went through this? That was like a biggest fear of mine. But I said, I got nothing to lose. Cause now I'm putting my sobriety together. I'm feeling good. I'm going to meetings. I'm starting to, really like pick up on my program. I said, even if I help just one person, right, then that's all that matters. So started the nonprofit in the start of 2020, and rep for responders. That was the goal, increase the emotional and physical survivability skills of first responders, make responsible choices while we're working at home, and prevent suicide. So open up a gym. That was it. Oh, and I was big. Do you know who Mark Bell is?
Yeah.
So Mark Bell was like, always followed him when I was younger, and he has his gym. It was like, lift through it. Mm-hmm. Free gym for everybody. I was like, that's such a great idea. So open up a gym free for first responders and military. That was the main goal. That was the mirage, I call it. Because if I would have just opened up a space for first responders to talk, it'd just be me, myself, and I talking. Right. So got the nonprofit passed, don't know anything about business, still learning today. 501c3, I'm like, okay, put a lot of money, doing. And the gym opens up. Awesome, 830 square foot space in Rockland. And I started the GoFundMe. Raise a lot of money quick for the mission, and it meant a lot. Like, a lot of people were donating, like, people were, because it's really, you know, we got hit hard with an NYPD of 10 officers losing lives to suicide. And March of 2020, what else happened? COVID. Gym was open for 10 days, and then we closed the doors for good.
Oh my God.
So then at that point was very like a pivotal. That was another big decision to make, because the gym also, like, going back to the illusion, we were gonna have weekly meetings there once a week. Call it roll call, unfiltered. Come in, meet people. Because if I'm a cop in the Bronx, I might not feel comfortable talking about what I'm going through with other cops in the Bronx. But if you meet Dave in Westchester as a firefighter or another cop in Manhattan or whatever, get coffee before, work out before. That was like the goal. And like that conversation with our job would help you get resources in the community, or, you know, just have a safe space, a safe haven to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, great, gym closed, COVID's going on, you know, world's like, everyone's going, gotta get, you know, screaming. Do I go left and say it was worth a shot, focus on my sobriety? Or do I go right and say this is when first responders really need us the most, but this is when Frank really needs himself the most? I was 4 months sober and it was really helping me stay sober. It was giving me a purpose. I was seeing myself grow. I was seeing people like saying thank you. I was seeing people saying, I've been struggling too. Like, you're not alone. And I'm like, damn, like, I'm not alone. We're all not alone. And let's go. And we just, I went right. And then we went online like everybody else. And that's where the, we made it through, man. We made it through. And then that's where the program, that's how the program started.
Incredible story, man. Seriously. And the mission itself, I think, is something that's just so needed. And that statistic still seems so alarming to me. And I think because I'm not in that LEO world, I mean, I have a lot of friends and family members my whole life. You know, I actually thought I was going to be a law enforcement officer myself, right here in Stanford, actually. And, you know, there were other plans for me. But the mission itself, man, definitely hits home. And I think a lot of people struggling, you know, whether you're a first responder or not, I think a lot of people are stressed about jobs, you know, and I think a lot of people don't have the ability to turn it off. And to somebody, it might seem like, dude, like, your job is like not that stressful. Like, it's really not. But to that person, it's the world.
Yeah.
You know, and I see that every day. And I think it's something that's so relatable to people, but also like, we need more of this, you know, and you need to continue to tell your story and continue to do this outreach for the first responder community. And I know a lot of non-first responders now that are like myself, that are just so invested in what it is that you do. And you guys have a great community around you, and you guys support things that aren't just solely first responders. You know, so that's how now, I guess, so once the gym closed, you then decided to do these events.
So the gym closed and we had to pivot, right? So The idea I had in my mind was, and which we did, was, okay, all these gyms were suffering as well, right? So let's give back to the community as well, what you were just talking about. So now we'll sponsor first responders at the gym in the community. So we'll pay for the first 3 to 4 months. So we did that in Rockland, Westchester, Orange, Long Island. We did that a lot. Now we
pay for first responders to go to gyms?
Mm-hmm. We primarily do Rockland County. But we have relationships with Jiu-Jitsu Gym, Enzo Gracie Rockland, Strength and Conditioning Gym, Varsity House, Iron Fist Athletics, which was a CrossFit gym, but they are still they're not CrossFit affiliated, right? We have a few other gyms in Rockland County that we deal with, that we do. So now we believe in multiple pathways of recovery. I'm not going to say you have to do Jiu-Jitsu, you have to powerlift, you have to bodybuild, you have to CrossFit, you have to do pickleball. No. Whatever fits your lifestyle and that you enjoy, that you know that's going to get you out of your up here and bring you down here in the present moment and make you better, like, let's do it. So we'll pay for those first 3 to 4 months. Of course, you have to make a certain amount of classes and things like that.
Right.
But we do 1 month at a time. That's our fitness pathway. That's what we do. I'm a recovery coach. Got certified in that. And my job is, I'm working with a cop right now, 12 weeks. Dave, today is my job is, how are we going to get you to stay sober from today, Wednesday to next Wednesday? That's all I care about. And focusing on your triggers, people, places, and things, education on fitness, nutrition, how can we spend time more wisely, check in, things like that. We have an addiction and trauma specialist who's great, who does coping skills, meditation, 12 weeks, same sponsorship. Nutritionists, so it's Joe, Danny, my wife, Christina. By the way, the girl I was telling about came back in my life, becomes my wife.
Mm.
We get married. She becomes a recovery coach. She's a CrossFit coach. She's a health coach. You know, we just had our first son. So the recovery man has given me the promises and the things I never thought were possible. And it all become, and it's like, it sounds, it's, let's just simplify it. I put down the damn drink and I was honest with myself and I stopped running. All I did was put down the drink and be honest with myself, and my life got better tenfold.
But it was hard along the way.
Obviously. Oh, no, extremely tough.
The toughest.
But just thing like, in the world. If you could say that, just stopped drinking.
That's it. That's the action. Stop.
Right. And then I started being honest with myself. I didn't get a new job.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do any, like, I didn't change like anything like materialistic. That's what I'm trying to say. But just by putting down the drink and stop drinking, Let's just start with that. My life changed dramatically. That's just simplifying it.
This episode is brought to you by Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening. Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening is an experienced teeth whitening salon where you can get up to 7 shades lighter with just a 60 or 90 minute session in a professional and relaxing setting. They offer the most superior product coupled with the highest quality of customer service available to get you instant results. Whether you have an important event to attend, such as a wedding, birthday, anniversary, interview, or you are just unhappy with the color of your teeth, this LED light technology helps whiten your teeth fast and easy. At Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening, they understand how important your smile is to you. And speaking from personal experience, you'll be guided by highly efficient staff in a relaxing environment to reach your desired shade. Let them know you're a friend of Dave's from the No Snooze podcast and connect with them at HudsonValleyTeethWhitening.com or on Instagram at HV Teeth Whitening. Now, back to the epi.
Let's talk about, and listen, I don't care how long this episode goes, I gotta be honest, because the story is good. I know we're going on here, but want to touch on Christina's impact. I met her once, you know, and I can just tell, you know, how supportive she is, obviously, of what it is that you do. And I can really tell the love and the dynamic that's there between you. So I envy that about you guys. But I think family is so critical, you know, and I'm thinking of critical in the success of somebody in recovery. And I'm thinking of obviously my mom's journey and how, you know, my brother and sister and I, you know, there were so many times, specifically me, I won't speak for them, but like I used to get angry at my mom, you know, mad, like just stop, look at what you're doing, look at where your life is. And I remember her being like, I can't, you know, and to somebody like me who's very, as CV would call me, a robot, I'm like, just can stop. And it's not until I think the family makes that switch. And also you have to get educated, right? During my mom's recovery process, she also did an inpatient at Sunrise House in New Jersey. Incredible facility. I mean, absolutely incredible what these people do. And they devote their lives to the sobriety of other individuals. Talk about a life of service. It wasn't until we get educated and understand that this really is a disease. This is not something like, who would choose this? Right. You know, who would choose to do this every single day and you know, lose your job and lose your family and kill relationships and lose everything that you once had? Nobody chooses this. So I think the first step is obviously the education. Talk to me about Christina, though, and the impact that she's had and really what she means to you.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you would want to say there's no words, but there's so many words. Yeah, she's been my rock, man, lifesaver. Like, she's the one that, like, believed in me since the start. No matter all the hell and what I put her through, like, she was always knew, like, my who my true self was. And so, like, the best in me, even though she had to walk away, you know. And she would admit it, too. Like, you know, she had to put in her own work. She went to therapy because there was stuff that she had to go through. And she got super educated becoming a coach and things like that. So started to understand it more, because at first she had no idea, you know. She didn't grow up in a household with any alcoholic mother or father or sister or brother, right?
Yep.
But she was she was my ball of yarn. She was the string of my hope, even when I wasn't, like, when she wasn't there physically, emotionally, spiritually. And for somebody to take a step back and see their partner or someone going through a hard time, and also knowing that it's not, like, she didn't put the blame 100% on me. And she saw that in me, and that made me feel good. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And now I'm not putting the blame on her, but she also understood at the same time, like, she had to put in work for herself so then we can make that relationship work and build. Mm-hmm. Which is really tough, because when someone's, like, going through a hard time and you're arguing with someone, like, it's always so easy to blame the other person.
Yeah.
Like, how many people can say, like, they're going through a relationship that's crazy, but at the same time it's like, oh, you know, Frank's doing this, that, F him, do this, that. But, like, you know what? I'm gonna take a step back. Like, I'm going to look at myself in the mirror, and I'm going to make myself the best version of Christina I can be, so that I can come back stronger and be able to help Frank in this relationship, which is ultimately like, you know, male and female. And in my case, right, when we get married, like the bond, but together, like in the spiritual world, like this is it, man. Like we chose to do this together. Yeah, man, she's great, tough, great, in and out, man. And yeah, I'm very blessed. And on my journey, higher power, God, was a huge part of my sobriety, man. And I'm very, she barely drinks. She hates, she doesn't do it at all. Like, thank God.
Yeah.
Which helps the relationship tenfold.
I love her perception of accountability too, man. Like I get a lot of heat sometimes from individuals who are close to me, you know, family members specifically, a couple coworkers of mine who I'm close to, where I'm always challenging, because I do it in my own life. You know, I look at any situation, no matter how wrong I am, I try to look internally. Mm. But a lot of people, they don't understand that. And they think I'm being like an asshole when I say, like, what could you do? And they're like, well, oh, here we go again. Like, right, I guess it's me, my fault. Yeah. It's like, no, it's not your fault. But there's always something that you can do differently or you can do better. I mean, it's something that I try this in my own life, not successful all the time, but I'm very mindful of it. And I just wish more people would understand where you're coming from with that. And like, to Christina's point, like she had every right to just be like, dude, peace. It's way easier to not be with you than it is to be with you. And she had the balls, for lack of a better word, to just step up and say, you know what? Like, I'm going to not only support Frank, but I'm going to become the best version of myself. And then what that's going to do is there's going to be a trickle effect to that. So I really love that. Wow, man. Do you think there is a, I mean, I know it's no irony, but you guys been together a while. Ironic that this higher power allowed you to have the beautiful child that you have today after you stopped drinking.
Oh, yeah. if we had this conversation, right, you've talked to me in the psych ward or rehab, and I would not even think that this, no way I'd be like, I'm going to have this and that in 5 years. And
yeah.
So Caden was born 6 weeks ago, and a beautiful thing about it is like, I control this, but there's a big possibility that he may never see his father ever hold a drink in his hand, which is a completely different lifestyle how I grew up. And by the way, I didn't mention this, but my father went to the same rehab that I did.
Wow.
I went first and he followed my footsteps, which is weird to say that a father follows his son's footsteps. He was dying, man. He had alcoholic acidosis. He was addicted to not only booze, but also painkillers. He had a really bad accident in the firehouse and on the job. Yeah, it was bad. Wow. And that was happening. I got sober September 2019. Then he went to high watch November 2019. He went to high watch.
Wow. Is that, I saw something about a kidney replacement too.
Yeah. So then he ended up, he had a Buerger's disease, which is a kidney disease where there's really no cause, but your kidneys is not working. But then of course, over his drinking career, it didn't help. And then he just got a new, he got a,
put a quick 45 years in real quick.
He got sober, wow. Started changing. And dude, he was a heavy hitter his career was probably 50 years, man. It's crazy. His father, my grandfather, and my dad's name is Frank. I'm Frank the fourth. So Frank second, awesome. He died when I was one. And I didn't really get to know him. I heard he was a great guy. Right. But, I didn't get to have him in my life. So now my dad is sober. And now Caden can have his grandfather in his life. And that means the world to me. You know, no matter what happens, man, if reps ends tomorrow, I would say the biggest accomplishment, of course, if I got sober, but like seeing building a new relationship with my father, who I love very dearly, and seeing him get sober, like having that sober relationship with him now since 20. And we still, I mean, Frank, we still butt heads, but it's different. And we can... Even if something happens, you know, there's so many times where he'll call me 2 minutes later and say, I apologize. I take ownership. Back in the day, he never did that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's a great, very special to me and my son of like the choices we make now, man, and the trauma and what we get through now is not our kids. If we don't get through what we get through, I believe it gets passed on to our children. Now, there's still a chance it might happen, but you have a chance with your behavior, then these changes now to like change your bloodline, man. It's crazy to think about
it. Yeah, it is.
Like now I think about my dad, who was a big drinker, who passed on to me, that got that from his my grandfather, who passed away from this disease as well. Then his father, or great-grandfather, he actually died in World War II on the USS Dorchester, but he was probably a drinker. Mm-hmm. So he probably learned that from his and his and his and his and his. And like, how long are we going to go back? But now it's like, boom, higher power here. Frank, you have a chance to change this for Caden and the future generations. Exactly. And it's like, if you can think about it like that, like if you could like take yourself out for 1 second, not put yourself first and think about your future family, it's like, you know, maybe it is my responsibility. Maybe I can do this. I can change this. Like, believe in yourself. That's what I'm trying to say here. And then my dad's brother, Uncle James, who I love very much, he passed away from this disease in 2021, wow. Right? So all these positive things happened. He took his own life. Mm. He did a vicious act to himself, and I won't get into it, very graphic. But yeah, and he was a great guy, but this disease and COVID got to him. So I've lost family, you know, to this disease. And yeah, so you, no matter what, you know, I was taking him to meetings. So, you know, like we were talking about before, man, you can try to help people so much and love them and stuff. But just the number one thing, if someone's close to you, try your best not to put all the blame on you, and I could have been there and things like that. It's really hard to say, but it's not easy. But just know the person makes the decision, whatever, not even talking about that, but any decision with the tools and the skills that they know. But also know that when someone does that type of act, that it is a symptom from depression, from the mental illness, and they think that there's no way out. And but there always is, I firmly believe, there always is a way out. There really is.
You're a powerful dude, my brother. Seriously. And you have a you're very stoic, right? Is that the word? That's the word, right, CV? And stoicism is something that in the personal and professional development world, everyone strives for. You know, stoic is just, you know what that is, right? Mm-hmm. Like stoicism, it's just, it is what it
is. My man Aristotle.
That's it, yeah. You and Stewie read it back then, huh? it just is
maybe
what it is.
Maybe in a past life, you know? I don't know if you believe in any of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah. But it just is what it is, man. And like, you've taken not only ownership of where you were, but now you're paying it forward in a way that I think you don't even understand the magnitude of it, you know? And I think your message, like I said before, it not only helps first responders, but it helps everybody struggling with mental health. You know, this episode primarily is about, you know, sobriety and mental health, and that's great. But, you know, I challenge people to think about what that looks like in their life. Mm. You know, the challenges that they face, the depression that they face, the anxiety that they face, because I don't know one person in my life that doesn't have a form of anxiety or a form of depression or a form of aggression that, you know, you think is just like, oh, I'm angry, but it's really not.
It's part of human nature, man. It's in our DNA, everybody.
But it's negative. You know, like a lot of us, you associate it with just this negative thing, and it's okay. It really is okay. And it's okay to, you know, talk about these things. And I've really tried to personally lean as the platform grows, lean into these conversations. And I'm so thankful for you, man. I'm thankful for not only what you do, but I'm thankful for you as a man.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
All right, man, as we close out, just talk to everybody and let them know where they can connect with you personally and, you know, support the cause, Reps for Responders. This is your camera right here. Oh. There you go.
Thank you very much, man. Just thank you for everything that you do. I have to say that first, and being a voice for, the community. That's number one, man. And so Reps for Responders, Instagram at Reps for Responders, Facebook, you can reach out to me on repsforresponders.org. A big shout out to everybody on the team, from Christina, Nick, Jason, Aaron, Danny, Steve, Brad, the whole entire team. Danny, appreciate you all. Responder Talk is a huge part of our program. We run a meeting every Sunday night called Responder Talk, open to active and retired first responders and military via Zoom. Every Sunday at 7, we've had check-ins from 24 different states across the country. We've had 4 countries check-in. That's a big part of our program. That's like the bread and butter. Mm. We've had guest speakers from your everyday cop, firemen, to Navy SEALs, NFL players. Really great network there. So please reach out. We have NYPD guys checking in with Texas Rangers, Florida, New Jersey State Troopers, everything. We are a nonprofit, so obviously we thrive on donations. And we have a big event coming up in April, our beefsteak in New Jersey. $80 donation ticket. It's going to be great. Cigar bar, DJ. I actually have a guest speaker from Echelon Front coming, Jocko Willing's company. So if anyone has any questions about that, looking for sponsors.
Anybody can attend?
Anybody. This is open. Thank you. It's open to everybody. Last year, we had almost 100 people. It was in New Jersey, Bloomingdale, like 30 minutes away from Rockland. But yeah, and the events that we have, anybody can attend. It's not just for first responders and military. So,
And they're fun too, man. And the networks are great.
Yeah, you know? And it's nothing like bringing into the present moment and you just meet people of all different walks of life, but you can always just say, it's the same goal. At the end of the day, we're all different video game avatars, but we're all trying to get to that final boss, man. Mm-hmm. Just peace, serenity, and enjoying life together and being the best version of ourselves. I think that's just going to take to the end of time, to the last breath, to be the best version. But when you take that last breath, you can, that serenity, that life goal is like, this is who I am. I'm transformed. I lived the life I wanted to live.
So that's the event in April. Share the one in May as well. Sailhouse.
So May, we just, big news, May 11th, right? At Sailhouse Tarrytown. Shout out to Sean. Thank you for holding it down. And Dave, we're at Fit for Duty. Going to be sponsored by Mike Cunahan and Mike Trotter from First Form. And Mike on Instagram, No Donuts Here. And that's going to be May 11th from 9 to 1. We're going to have an Eventbrite link to sign up. But it's going to be workout. We're going to have food at Tarrytown. Cold plunge, and we did that last year at Randall's Island. We had about 100 people, and it was a great time.
Wow.
So that's called Fit for Duty, and that's going to be open to anybody as well, sponsors and all that. But it's a great time to just be together, get a great workout in, work hard, and to support each other.
Mm. And yeah, man, I just want to shout out specifically Nick from Reps for Responders. Great, great dude. But also my guy, who really connected us, Jason Lacayo.
The real Jumpman Jay.
The real Jumpman Jay. You know, he mentioned something, and I'm going to steal his words, but he gave Sean a shout out for connecting me and Jason. And I'm going to say it in his words too, man. You didn't have to, but you did. So thank you very much for that connection. And guys, thank you for listening. Whether you listen to one episode or 183, right, CB? There's so many. I'm getting lost with it. Guys, we're so grateful for your support. Frank, we're so grateful for you and joining us. This episode brought a lot of value. And guys, you can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. You have anything before we close out?
Keep it simple, one day at a time.
There you go. And until next time, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
Frank, you're the real deal. That was... Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at No Snooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Come on.